the delegations can just find the spaces, then we can continue with our engagement. Right, thank you very much. We will now immediately go to questions to members. Of course, there was a lot of questions raised by the lobby groups, and of course, SAPS, the Secretariat, and the Firearms Appeal Board are welcome to come in. I will allow three questions in the first round, and then we will, first a few from my side, and then I'll go to Honourable Kola Barnard, Honourable Bele, Honourable Molabatsi. The questions from my side, actually the elephant in the room to a certain extent is the issue of stakeholder relationship. And it's clearly, broken down irretrievably in certain instances. And I think really we need an assurance from SAPS, but also from the Secretariat of Police as the civilian oversight body, what is going to be done to solve that. Because a lot of the issues actually on the table today, although the portfolio committee, it's important that we take note of, should be dealt with at other fora, and it should be sorted out. So it's issue of leadership, it's issue of capacity, issue of commitment. So we really need a proper response on that. Because if we're not going to get a proper response, beginning of October, we're going to call this all the role players back again. We need assurance. What is being done to deal with that? The second issue that was also being raised, I think, in passing by some of the presenters, is the issue of the firearms amnesty. We want to know from the portfolio committee side, what is SAPS, what is the game plan? I think in a recent meeting with the acting national commissioner, we posed that question. He said, well, he's not ready to deal with it. He will come back to us. We haven't received any information. There was apparently a process in the NCOP. But there was also indication by the portfolio committee when that matter was before this committee, there should be engagements with the sector, with the relevant stakeholders. So we want to get an indication, where is that process? When is it going to come to again back to the portfolio committee on police? We need clear guidelines on that. Honourable Kola Barnard.
Absolutely. Chair, sitting in this room, between the stakeholders and the SAPs, they're like a divorced couple. There's an icy wall between them, and really, I couldn't agree with you more. It's got to stop absolutely today. In 2014, this committee visited the CFR and determined then that the building basically should be condemned. Rats, lice, the corridors blocked with endless boxes of files, which I gather used to be shifted every time a building inspector came, to prevent the building from being condemned, which it certainly should be. It's an absolute death trap. I don't believe it's any better. One woman I know spends R1,000 a month to fumigate her office because the bird lice come in waves down her walls. Now, I would like to ask, we are hearing, yes, there's another building shining in the distance. I actually don't believe that. But I would propose that the Minister of Public Works, formerly police, be called to this committee to tell us exactly where and when you will be moved to a building that is fit for human habitation and work. The Minister, being from police, is absolutely aware, intimately aware of what's going on at that building, and I think you need all the help that you can get. there are also general concerns in terms of non-compliance and the management of firearms. I'd like to know what measures has the SAPS put in place to address non-compliance by SAPS members, DFOs, detectives, those two specifically, DFOs and detectives. You know, there seems to be a massive lack of consequence management. When they are not complying, are you simply telling them to comply, or do they face some sort of consequences? What are you doing to sort out the situation? And I'm including here the detectives who fail to submit ID numbers, for example, for persons unfit to possess a firearm. We have an enormous DVA problem. And, of course, if a person's ID number is not put on that list, then the detectives are actually working against the outcomes of the Domestic Violence Act, and that can't be acceptable. So what are the consequence managements there? And we're allowed three, Chair, am I correct? Three. All right, short one. How many cases of corruption have been associated with the CFR during the 16-17 financial year? And I'd like to compare it, please, to the 15-16 financial year. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Barnard, Honourable Bailey, then Honourable Mbatsi, and Honourable McClung.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you for all the presentations. I think just by way of opening remarks is to convey a reminder that I believe the committee would agree with to the SEPs. I think it's important just to always sometimes state the obvious and put things in context, which is that the SEPs as a state body are vested with public power, but that public power has to be exercised both reasonably and rationally in the public interest. And I think the challenges we've been hearing presented to us are instances of that public power being exercised either unreasonably. You know, the recent history of poor consultation is unreasonable. It is unfair to the stakeholders. Or being exercised irrationally, because by not having adequate consultation that can contribute to solutions, SEPs actually makes their job more difficult and not benefiting from that input. And so it's really about getting back to those basics of the principles that SEPs should operate with as a state body. Public power for public interest exercised reasonably and rationally. So my three questions, Chair, are just for the SEPs for this round. I think we'll have time for a second one when I want to touch on other issues. And my first question is to ask whether SEPs management, especially within the CFR, do you view the firearm and ammunition dealers, the firearm owners, and hunters associations as valid and legitimate stakeholders in the firearm controls environment? If so, why have your efforts to maintain productive consultation and ensure transparency then been so poor? Because it has to be one or the other. Either you see them as valid and legitimate, and therefore the fruits of that would be consultation, transparency, and synergy. But given that the evidence has been not that behavior, which suggests that you don't see them as valid, why is that? My second question, Chair, is what I think is always a bit of an elephant in the room, which made a very brief appearance the last time when we had the former police minister presenting on the proposed firearms amnesty. And I think I managed to kind of corner him sufficiently to kind of slip out the truth. But the question to SEPs management is, if you can explain to us, what is actually your paradigm and philosophy as SEPs management when it comes to private firearm ownership? Is the view of management that citizens have an inherent a priori right to own firearms, and the state's role is merely to regulate the conditions for that ownership in order to mitigate risk factors? Or, as is the sense I tend to get, do they believe that firearm ownership is a privilege that the state can dispense at discretion, and that in fact the ideal situation for the SEPs would be one where there is greatly reduced and minimally maintained levels of firearm private ownership? You know, is there an underlying wholesale disarmament philosophy around SEPs' approach to and management of the firearm control environment? Because that might then explain why things are made so difficult and there's just no reasonable efforts to optimize outcomes in that environment. And then my third question, Chair, is linked to the issue of consequence management raised by Honourable Caller Barnard. But I want to pitch it at the higher level, which is to ask whether has anybody at senior management level ever been held accountable for the poor performance within the CFR. So in other words, do section heads, do component heads, the brigadiers, the major generals, the, you know, do they still get their bonuses, for example, despite the dysfunctionality or not addressing the dysfunctionality in the system? Because I would like to believe that all of those people in senior management signed a performance agreement which outlines key performance areas, indicators, targets, benchmarks. And if you don't meet it, then there are consequences, least of which would be not qualifying for your bonus. So do we have that accountability enforcement for performance standards and performance outcomes, which the CFR clearly has not been doing? And I'm asking in particular at the senior level, because the last question was about detectives and the more operational level. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chairperson. My first question is on slide 16. You mentioned a training manual that goes to SAS. You mentioned a training manual for the officers in unfit declaration. Can we be provided with that manual? My second one is a more direct one. Are you still having those piles and piles of files in your corridors? Or is there anything that happened since we last visited your offices? My last one is on what happened to the company that was responsible for the printing and distribution of license cards in the past. Did it just go away? What happened to it? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honorable Mutlungu.
Thank you, Chairperson. I don't think that mine will be a question, but it will be a kind of an observation, Chairperson. I think from the side of gun-free South Africa, the projected views seem to be, to me, workable and systemic in terms of bringing a desirable kind of a systems management of a firearms control. Now, the reason why I'm raising this, Chairperson, is because I have raised in the past, in our recent meeting, that when it comes to the question of the question that was raised by Mr. de Klerk one day when he was here, of fiscal dumping, to me, it goes back to this, that without us, Chairperson, addressing the budget cycle from the side of police, there will always be billions and billions of rands that are pumped into the system without us as public getting a desired outcome. I quickly go to our recent visit to Free State, I think, last year or 2 years back, when the DFO there outlined a serious challenge, even when it comes to staffing. I think you'll recall, Chairperson, that people from the side of PSA have been brought into the service of this particular management of firearm without even a prerequisite, a deeper knowledge of it because of shortage of staff. Now, if then you go further to that, it goes back to the question of fiscal dumping, that what is the purpose of having a firearm control unit? Is to render a service to the end user, which are particularly civilians. This meeting today, Chairperson, highlights the fact that there is a lot of no consultation or poor consultation, which at the end of the day will be guided by the high level of secrecy, because our policing hasn't moved much to be a much more of a transparent organ when it comes to most of its discharging of duties. Every inch of information will be subjected to high level of classification, even unnecessarily so. Now, that, at the end of the day, Chairperson, will actually culminate to a point which I observed even in KZN, whereby even only if, for example, you are a member of a particular party A, you have got a leeway to ownership of firearm, even only if you are a member of political party B, which is not in power, you are subsequently actually then disarmed. And that kind of a theory, Chairperson, is the theory that will actually then forever bring about unnecessary tension between the firearm owners and the police themselves. And I think we need to address this particular area to say, what is it, without also us losing sight of those who are firearm owners with dirty ulterior motives of wanting to sort of make themselves private armies, which can eventually pose security risk to the country as a whole. So I'm raising this, Chairperson, because at the end of the day, police will be tasked with this particular responsibility of saying, how many owners of guns do we have in the country? Are they compliant with the rules of engagement? So that then we can be able to pick up or have early warning signs of people that are suddenly becoming unfit. Now, failure for us to be able to have a track of that, I don't think it will forever be an unnecessary bureaucracy and a burden to law-abiding citizens to actually subject themselves to very unrealistic gun control in South Africa, when most of our people, Chairperson, and I think we have seen even in the case of KZN, people in South Africa right now are getting killed largely through these illegal firearms because we don't have sufficient control over them. Now, even only if I am disarmed and then people say that, no, the state has a duty to protect you. Finally, when my family is raided by criminals, police come to me and say, we can't be everywhere at the same time, which is just a simple excuse that we get from now and again. Not that because people cannot defend themselves. At times, people do defend themselves if and only if we are actually then creating such a space so that criminals cannot just take our people for a ride. But even only if we make it impossible for them, we are going to get, or we will soon hit a ceiling whereby civilians will actually then undermine the rules of engagement, and that will be, that will bring the whole loose of, that will break loose the whole can of worms in the country. That is the concern that I've got, based, informed by the question that has been raised, particularly by end users who are then saying that there seems to be a lack of consultation in this particular process. Then I think as a committee chairperson, we are tasked to say that can then our firearm control division initiate from now on a transparent mechanism of actually coming out to those individual people and then be able to develop a policy that will be benchmarked on the basis of tangible, realistic, and practical forms, rather than creating an unnecessary bureaucracy that will make our people finally being non-compliant in terms of ownership. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Just my third question before we go to responses, and I think maybe the Secretary of Police must start with that response first. I think a number of the presentations this morning referred to the current issue of the new legislation. Can we maybe get an update? Where is the legislation? Because, I mean, it was previously promised to come to the committee. It was on the agenda. Because a lot of the issues that's been raised here can be dealt with in the new legislation or amendments. So if the Secretary can just give us indication, when is it coming to Parliament? What is the anticipated route? And very importantly, also, the consultation process internally. Because the question of consultation is a golden thread through all the presentation this morning. So let's start there. Mr. Appiah, thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. The process of the legislation, we just got the signature from the Minister in terms of the draft that we have to process through the JCPX cluster to Cabinet. So that approval has been done, the work has been done, the consultation with the state law advisor, that process has been finalized. Once Cabinet approves that the bill can go for publication, for public comment, then it will be published, and then we will have a consultation with all the stakeholders. I just want to indicate, because a number of stakeholders have been raising an issue that they want to get involved as we are doing the first drafting of the legislation. The inputs that we got, which came from the summit that was held, coordinated by Parliament in 2015, and all that information has been taken into consideration, which were inputs that come from the stakeholders. We further on that, the Minister established a committee to do further research based on those inputs. We did research, international comparisons and so on, and that research report came out with the recommendations that we have now took into consideration in terms of the drafting of that legislation. And we also even have the stakeholders, they do request bilateral discussion with the civilian secretariat from time to time. And as we have those engagements, we take those inputs into consideration when we are looking into the legislation. And inputs that we'll get from the portfolio committee, like the engagement that we are having in here, they get incorporated into that legislation drafting process, which now, as government, we need to have a consensus to say, okay, this is what we can publish. It addresses all the issues. You don't want to publish something that will now end up taking years for it to be finalized because you did not listen to what the people were saying. So we are at that process. In September, we are now putting this in the JCPS cluster program for us to present it there. And then we will have a cabinet memo, which I'm sure by October we should be going to cabinet for the permission for us to publish the bill for public comment. If you recall, honourable members, there was a bill that was published in 2015, and we had to improve on that following the summit that was held. At one point, when I appeared before the portfolio committee, the issue was raised to say, are we going to publish this again, or we are seeing it as the publication, as the foregone conclusion? No, we are now going to cabinet to ask them for us to republish the bill, because we revamped it completely based on the research that we have done.
Thank you, Secretary. Let's go to General Masamola and his team. Saps.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson and members. Firstly, let me deal with issues that you have raised and issues raised by other role players. Chairperson, I don't think it will assist me to go individually to each and everything. One, take note of the concerns of all the role players that they have raised. Of note is that in between the processes, of course, there were some court cases in between, and you had also our SAPS legal services also getting involved in advising as to what can be done, what can be discussed, and what not to be discussed. And I think, Chairperson, after having listened to all the stakeholders here today, what I'll do, or as SAPS, what we will do, is to call a meeting of all the stakeholders as soon as possible and have, of course, the SAPS legal services to come and clarify certain issues there and agree on the rules of engagement, because at some point there was a problem, I think, on that issue of the rules of engagement when a memorandum has to be signed. But I think we will, I commit that we'll meet as soon as possible and then have these lawyers present and then agree on rules of engagement, which probably maybe I myself will undertake to chair the meeting twice a year, and the rest then I'll delegate to the division and the component. But after we'll agree with all the role players on the rules of engagement, how we're going to engage, on what issues we're going to talk on them, and then I think we'll then move forward from there and improve the relations.
General, I agree with that, but I think what is going to be quite critical, because remember there's an appeal case and it seems the communications broke down due to the court cases. Whether there's court cases or not, there needs to be constant engagements on other issues, not necessarily the merits or the process of court cases, but you know, all the related issues with execution, applications. So I think that's quite important, that principle. Even if there's court cases or appeal cases, there should be constant engagement with that sector. Thank you. You can go ahead with the other response.
Thanks, Honorable Chair and members. Then on the issue of the amnesty, Chairperson, you remember the amnesty was presented to this committee. If I remember well, it was given a go-ahead, but however, the starting date, if I remember, was 1st June, somewhere there, which is past. And we then went to present at the Justice Committee, which it also gave it a not a go-ahead. But of course, then thereafter, the minister had to table it at the National Assembly. And then what happened then was that tabling was in the former minister, and then it has to be referred back. It has since been changed to our current minister, and it is currently, this week passed, it went again to the Minister of Police for tabling then in the National Assembly, with the recommendation for the starting date to be 1st of January 2018. But of course, if the committee wants us to come back here, I think we are at liberty to you, Chairperson. We can come and present.
General, can we stop it there? That's a major problem. That's a major problem. We indicated at the previous engagement with regard to the consultation, it must be properly processed by the portfolio committee that then reports to the National Assembly. It can't be tabled de novo by the minister. You will be sidestepping the legislative processes. And I think we must call SAPS Legal Services also next week, because it's now the third time we raise this issue. And it doesn't seem to understand the legislation as well as the parliamentary processes. We're going to run into a major problem again. And we indicated previously as well, there should be consultation with the stakeholders with regard to that processes of amnesty. And I want to really urge SAPS to caution them. It's wasted cost again, and people will have to take responsibility, because the Portfolio Committee indicated very clearly what the process is, and it must come back. To just take it to the NCOP committee and get it adopted there, that's not Parliament. So it's quite important they must come back to this committee. But I think legal services of SAPS, they must come here Tuesday as well, the Head of Legal Service. I don't know, because there's clearly a problem with legal advice. You can go ahead. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Chairperson. We take note of that and we will comply. The rest of the questions I will give the team to respond, Honorable Chairperson. But let me just take one question of Honorable Mbele as to what is our philosophy in terms of firearm ownership in South Africa or in the country, whether we want to... Yeah, he did say quite a mouthful. Chairperson, with regard to SAPS, our role is to manage and administer firearms. We don't necessarily, it's not our objective to say you can't own a firearm. Ours is to administer the law, and whoever qualifies for a license to possess a firearm, we've got no problem with that. And, of course, currently there are certain provisions of the law that says whether a person qualifies or not. And I think out of the presentations done by various stakeholders here, it will be important that, yes, we meet and also dwell on those areas so that we have got common understanding and we can be able to establish or develop some criteria around that. Let me give the team to answer some of the questions. Thanks, Chairperson.
Right, the rest of the team, thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members and the stakeholders. Good morning. I will tackle a few of the questions, Honorable Chairperson. I will start with the question of the leadership that is changing in the CFR. I just want to make this note that the leadership for 2016-17, and that will continue in the CFR, we only made the changes in terms of the structure of the police, and we have made two appointments in the CFR environment. That is, we appointed the component head, General Bothma, and we appointed as well Brigadier Bupape. Those are the two changes that we made. And with the accommodation of CFR, we are still at the same building that the Portfolio Committee knows. And with the files, Honorable Mulibatsi, that are in our corridors, yes, we still have the files that are moved now and then to Silverton, but those files we have on a daily basis in our corridors. The training manual that we utilized for the training of the officers for the Section 102 will be made available to this portfolio committee. And the cases of corruption that were reported at the CFR. The numbers of 2015-16, we currently don't have. We can provide that in writing, Honorable Chairperson. And for 2016-17, we don't have any corruption case that was registered specifically for CFR environment. Then the other questions will be answered by my team members. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Gentlemen, see
you. Honorable Chair.
Honorable Chairperson, honorable members, I'm General Bothma for record purposes again. The one question that was raised in respect of the compliance of the South African Police Service, and I want to divide it into two groupings. The first one is the negligent loss of a firearm. In that regard, the moment if a firearm is being reported lost, stolen, it must be reported within 24 hours to the nearest police station where such an incident occurred. Thereafterwards, there is a process that follows as far as loss management is concerned, that a proper investigation must be concluded, and the same from the criminal perspective as well as the departmental perspective. The matter is being investigated and then consequential management. will be taking place. In respect of firearms from our safe storage facilities, yes, first of all, like in all other cases, immediately a case docket has been opened because it's still theft of a firearm. The matter is also be a criminal matter that will be investigated against that specific official. And concurrently with that, there's also a departmental process that followed. And where it is not a police firearm, there will not be a loss management process being followed. If it is a police firearm in the SAP 13, and some question was raised earlier on, yes, there is police firearms in the SAP 13. The moment we recover a firearm, then it's going through the SAP 13 process. Even if it's a police firearm, any state department, we must IBIS test it and see if such a firearm was involved in any criminalities. After that has been cleared, it's been taken up into the asset register. So consequential management, I hope I addressed it in this regard, Mr. Chair. I'm always prepared to add on. The other issue was in respect of specifically the printing by government printing works. The current status is as follows. The South African Police Service has got its own printers, which they purchased, I think it's about 2003. Now, at this point in time, the life span has been lapsed. Henceforth, we are sitting with a situation that we cannot continue. Then we must purchase from afresh new printing machines. And if you look to the costing as well as the distribution, it will be at a very high cost that will take place. Even the replacement of certain parts, you cannot replace any part of that specific, they call it the zebra printing, for interest sake. I believe, is there any others? Refusal? Yeah. Mr. Chair, in respect of the refusal reasons, I don't want to waste time. What happened in there were shortcomings in the in providing specific reasons for refusal. We revisit it in totally. As from the 1st of August, you will see also that in the past there was a so-called standard reason and then comprehensive reason. We changed it in totality due to the fact that the Constitution read with the Farms Control Act. That deciding officer has got the discretion. And it's very important that it's not a computerized discretion, but the discretion been taken on the merits of the entire application in front of him. So yes, from the 1st of August, it will be comprehensive reasons that we will provide it. If there's still somewhere a shortcoming, we always open door that they can come to the fort and we can address it from any environment, Mr. Chair.
Any other responses?
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chair. There was a question whether we view the institution and stakeholders as as people working with us. Yes, definitely true, Mr. Chairperson. Honorable Chairperson, we do view them as our stakeholders in the firearm environment. And as I've alluded before, we will venture into that as soon as possible. And sometime, yeah, to have too many lawyers it becomes problematic. So, but we'll, as I said, we will soon engage them and deal with the way forward with regard to that. Thanks.
Brigadier?
Chairperson, Honorable Chairperson, members of the House, the question I would like to respond to is the one that was posed by Honorable Mshongo with regard to PSA members that are employed without the necessary skills.
Brigadier, can you just maybe the microphone? Yeah, it's, you're not audible for us here in France. It's important.
Okay,
thank
sorry.
You.
Sorry, Chairperson. What I was saying was that the question that I would like to respond to is the one that was posed by Mr. Honorable Mshongo about the PSA employees that are employed as DFOs without the necessary knowledge and competencies. Our response to that is that we, on a continuous basis, we undertake skills audit with regard to the DFOs and everyone else that functions in that environment. And on an annual basis, we prepare training courses for all those people who have been identified as having skills shortage. We are currently, of course, doing that skills audit, we going around the country, and every time, as I've mentioned, we identify that gap, we do avail training courses. Thank you, Chairperson.
Right, other members of the team, Chairperson of the Firearms Appeal Board, there was also a referral to your institution in one of the presentations.
Thanks, Honourable Chairperson and Honourable Members of the Committee. I will respond to what has been raised by Mr. Hood, Martin Hood. I think in part, I'll first say that what he said was he was quoting the law or the provision of the Firearm Control Act, but somehow he did not quote the whole of the provision of such what was relevant to. In particular, he said he's not, or criticized that he's not happy with the manner in which the Firearm Appeal Board conducts itself, that it's conducting its proceeding in secrecy, mm-hmm. and that it does not allow members of the public to come and make oral representation. To answer to that, my answer as the board, the chairperson, is as follows. The board is a creature of statute. The procedure of how it's conducted has been laid down in the Act. And the Act provides as follows, that indeed the sitting, the procedure to be followed in the Firearms Appeal Board shall be determined by the chairperson. That is the law. It's not what we have made ourselves. Now, secondly, the issue of whether members of the public can come and give oral evidence in our proceedings, the law provides as follows. Regulation 91, subsection 8 of the Firearm Control Act says the chairperson or the Firearms Appeal Board shall or does have a discretion to call for oral evidence when it deem it necessary. Therefore, if you interpret that provision, you will realize that it's not just an open session like a normal court of law. We are only granted a discretion to call for oral evidence if we deem there is a need for that. It is not our own making. It is the legislature's intention. I thank you.
Right. Other responses? I just want to see what is outstanding. Yeah, the issue of consequence management was raised by one of the members. General Masia.
Thanks, Honourable Chairperson. There is no consequence management that was registered against any senior manager for 2016-17 for poor performance. And this is as well highlighted by our presentation that we have increased or we have improved the performance of the CFR for 2016-17. So there is no manager that was exposed to the consequence management. The other question that I want to respond to from Honorable Mhlongo, after the visit of Free State, where the portfolio committee noticed that we have a limited number of DFOs in that environment, we have increased the number of DFOs to 29, and all 29 are trained in the skills of DFO. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson.
Right, we're going to take another round now, members. Just a few follow-ups from my side, then we go to Honourable Molabatsi. I just wanted the issue that was raised, I mean, we also raised it in previous hearings, the issue of vetting of the CFR and the different colonels and section heads. What is the current status of the you know, the section commanders in terms of vetting? And then I think a very important issue also raised by Ms. Kirsten is the issue of security at the various SAPs, you know, stores, and the relation with regard to Section 13 stores. Can we maybe get an indication? Of course, we will get on Wednesday, you know, a first-hand account what happened at Mitchell's Plain as well as Belleville South. But, General, what is SAPs doing proactive to ensure that a Prince Louis matter can't occur again? What is your, you know, what measures is in place to ensure that there is proper control and assurance management? We don't get that from the presentations today. Honorable Molobatsi.
Yeah, Chairperson. Maybe on the other point that was mentioned by General Masemula, just to say, we as the ANC will not accept any process of the firearm amnesty that was not properly processed in the portfolio committee. And if you don't take this serious, we'll definitely have to call the minister. My first question is on, tell us about these flexi hours that you introduced. What are they? Are they overtime? What are they? And then my next question is on this. You know, I'm always bothered by the DFOs with these three tasks that they are doing. How on earth do we expect them to be effective? They, you know, doing three things, then we expect miracles. Is it, how long is it going to take to have them relieved of these other duties so that they must be effective? And you also mentioned this, yeah, thanks, Chair, I'll come back.
Bailey, thank you, Honourable Molobatsi.
Thanks again, Chairperson. First question, just a quick follow-up from the general to the response to my question around consequence management at senior level. So the response said that there was none implemented or needed in 2016-17. My follow-up is just to ask, what about past years? Did the managers, be their section component heads, in that environment who presided over the decline in performance and the deepening dysfunction in the CFR, did they ever face consequences, or did they just get shifted somewhere else without accountability and they left behind the mess that is the CFR in their wake? Because there seems to be a long-standing tradition, if I can put it that way, in the SEPs, of creating a mess, leaving it unaccounted for, and then somebody else has to clean up your mess. In the same way that, and the chairperson knows, sometimes I'll have to be a bit naughty, and I ask this question to some senior managers whether or not they're finding themselves having to clean up their predecessor's mess. We're now cleaning up Pierre's mess, for example. But, of course, they're all too tactful not to respond to that. So what about those past people? Have they faced accountability for poor performance and for basically mismanagement before 2016-17, when there has, I will acknowledge, been a trend of some improvements? Second question, Chair, is the short to medium term picture in which all of this is happening is what you could describe as a shrinking SEPs. We know that in this financial year, if I understand correctly, the fixed establishment of the SEPs has been reduced by 3,000 posts. So it's further understaffing and under-resourcing at various levels and across different environments. So the question that flows from that for me is, what has been and will be the impact of this on the capacity within the CFR? The SEPs presentation made mention of the capacity building interventions that have been put in place. But the backdrop to that is that the SEPs in real terms is shrinking numbers-wise. So it's about, how does this then impact within the CFR? Specifically, how many vacancies have the SEPs had to freeze in the CFR this year that now can't be filled? And how will that further shrink the numbers and availability of DFOs at station level? We already heard they are overstretched, they are, you know, diverted to other environments, Vispor primarily. This reduction in the fixed establishment of the SAPs, how much further will that adversely impact CFR? Is that even a question that's been looked at? Yeah. And then finally, Chair, is a question to the police secretariat, which is to ask Mr. Rapia, if he's still here, whether they are looking at or will they start researching the merits of this alternative proposal that's been raised a few times, whereby the policy and regulatory approach is to license the gun owner, so you license the person for competency and then merely ensure accurate registration of the firearm, as opposed to a two-track system that isn't being synchronized well in any event, but may even on a merit level just not be necessary if it's simple registration and you actually license the thing that needs to be licensed, which is competency and the individual. So whether the Secretariat is looking at or will start to look at that to advise policy reform. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honourable Bailey. Honourable Mulabachi, a small one, and then Honourable, yes, Kalibana.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just forgot this one. If you receive less applications in a particular year as compared to the previous year, what does that imply? Is it good? What does that imply?
Thank you, Honourable Mulabachi. Honourable Kalibana.
Thank you, Chair. I'm hearing of increasing numbers of rejections for applications for firearm licenses. Now, you have a backlog of 72,000 rounded up, reduced by nearly 100,000. So congratulations on the reduction. Does that include that figure of 72,000, include this year's applications? Is it an up-to-date figure? Because I don't want to be congratulating you and find out in 3 weeks that actually it wasn't a final figure up to date. Now, on the other hand, you know, those applications you claim have increased this year. It seems to be in line with the murder rate as citizens seek to protect themselves. So, of course, there is a fear that if there's a backlog at specific stations, very easy for someone to just stamp rejected, rejected, rejected to get a huge pile off their desk. How many appeals are we now looking at? Year on year as compared to last year? Are they on an increase in terms of numbers rejected? Then about the CFR, you've ordered or obtained 20 additional containers to store these piles of documents that line your corridors. It's always amazed me that you didn't predict the magnitude of paperwork you would be landed with via this legislation. It's like nobody sat down and crunch the numbers, but you now have the situation. You can't deal with it. Have you hired additional staff to deal with the matter of cataloging and filing the applications? It's no good the Auditor General saying year on year, but we asked them to produce this paperwork and they couldn't do it, and you'll find yourself there forever if you don't deal with the situation. Or are they simply being scooped up and dumped in these container and piles with no solution to the Auditor General's complaints? So where are they stored? I mean, there's certainly no room around that building. I mean, the staff get parking tickets every day because there's no parking. So where are you storing them, and how does this relate to the decentralization of the licensing mandate from where it currently sits to the provinces, which I think would ease the situation and certainly the storage situation as well? Possibly related, there were mentions of a mobile service points. Could you just fill us in on where that is? And then the company that was responsible for printing and distribution of the firearm license cards. Now, what's the status of that contract? I gather the printing was substandard. I'm astounded that you actually hire a company that can't produce quality goods. But has that lapsed, or was it terminated? Have you gone out to tender for a new company, or what is the situation in terms of printing that? And just a final request through you, Chair, perhaps we could ask for a list of the stakeholders. They state in their documentation that they've had meetings with them, 32 meetings. You know, who are these associations and when did they meet? Maybe they could give us that information as a committee. Thank you.
No, thanks, Jefferson. Jefferson, you know, I would like to, first of all, congratulate General with regard to Free State issue, because it was a concern when we visited there, and finding those people doing such an important task without necessary skills, but assisting the DFO who was hamstrung or overwhelmed by the workload himself. Then General Bodmer spoke of a storage facility which is going to come up with a very high cost. Jefferson, this thing takes me back again to the question of resource management or finance management within our policy. Because, you know, I would expect to say these costs are estimated to be at this particular level, or so much of the figure. We expect as police division responsible to actually gradually meet this obligation in 5 years or 10 years, through budgetary cycles, because there will never be a time, Mr. President, whereby you will have abundance of resources to square up everything all at once. But if and only if, Mr. President, there is no budgetary cycle that talks to allocation of resources, definitely, I am sorry, we will continuously come to meetings and come to the same looking at thing that files are lying idle, eaten by rats and all that, and yet you expect the same headquarter to discharge service to the lower structures. And it will be very, very unfortunate and impossible. So I think we must actually then bring that culture so that even at a station management level, people will have to feed to the question of budget proposition by police. Unlike what, because what General Skete was saying when I asked him, with this huge cut of budget of police, are you going to be able to operate? He said, yes. And you will bear with me, Mr. President. He said, yes. I said, how dare, with all this, it means, therefore then it brings me to the question that Mr. de Klerk was raising, that there is a lot of fiscal dumping taking place in our police without tangible output, or very little output. Because even only if we don't adopt a budgetary cycle system, which will ensure that the officer at the station level, his or her own interests are addressed, then we will forever have these kind of things that we observed recently, even on our visit to Kwahlabisa police station. I think there must be a change in that, so that we can then be able to do that. Maybe then, in final, by when, General Bodmer, you think this question of storage facility can be turned around? Because to me, it's no use to come and say, no, these things, these files are still lying idle in the passages there. But budgets are passed from time to time. And you guys are up there with these top managers of police. What is it? By when can we have that particular thing fixed? Because, Chairperson, I don't even think that I was a member of parliament by the time you went to visit the headquarters of Firearm Registry. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. I just want to ask a question to all the stakeholders.
there's a point made in Gun Free South Africa's conclusion. Establish independent firearms compliance regulatory body. Maybe to have an indication from Ms. Kirsten, in what other jurisdictions is this body successful? And then the view from the stakeholders. I mean, we have listened to the history of the CFR since 2011. We know the issues. We're going to the legislation next year. And if we're thinking about the future, what should we do innovatively to really take this further? And is it a core function of SAPS as well? I mean, that's another policy question that we can debate. But just in short, what would be the views of the stakeholders on that suggestion of Gun-Free South Africa? Let's go to the responses. First SAPS, then Gun-Free South Africa, and then the stakeholders. Thank you.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson and members. On the question of the safekeeping of our storage facilities for firearms, Honorable Chairperson, we do have standards as to in which firearms should be stored, and police stations that do not have the adequate facilities of safes, they store at the next police stations. And also, let me also just clarify one point. The firearms at Belleville South, those who were in the SAP 13, it was not SAPS firearms, it's exhibit firearms. And also to say that, Chairperson, as we embark on this exercise that we're going to do in the Western Cape in auditing all storages as well as firearms and removing firearms, thereafter, as I said, we will go out nationally to ensure that the standard of storage is the same. Yes, we take note with regard to the Belleville incident. The firearms is indicated to have been in a trommel with a padlock. So currently it's not yet clear where was this trunk. Was it inside the storage or outside? So the investigation will clarify that, Chairperson. On the question of...
General, just Honourable Molebatsi, short follow-up on that issue.
Yeah, thanks, sir.
Where is this station commander? Is he still at work? It's normal? And what's happening to him or her?
Honourable Chair members, the Provincial Commissioner is busy investigating, and we are taking steps. I cannot now say what. I might have been a little bit worried when you say... you want to see him next week, but let me leave it there.
If it's possible, you know, in terms of your statutory roles, we will really want to see him, but let's wait your further advices on that. Right.
Yeah, I think there's nothing wrong, Honorable Chairperson. He can be seen next week. There's nothing wrong. I think it's safe to leave it there. All right, thanks, Chairperson, on that one. And then let me go to the next question of by Honorable Mliwati around the firearm amnesty. We do take notes what the comments by the chairperson and the director, what he said. We understood very well what has been said. On the question of... there was a question by Honorable Mbele on the consequence management of within the environment of firearm registry. I think the committee will remember that the previous firearm registrar was dismissed. I think we still remember that. And quite a number of officials, there were actions taken against them before this current management that has been appointed. So we do take steps where definitely there is wrongdoing. On the question also of Honorable Mbele about the impact of the fixed establishment reduction on this, yes, definitely, I don't say I'm contradicting what General Skate have said, but the shrinkage will impact everywhere. It will definitely impact everywhere, including this environment of firearm DFOs. Honorable Chairperson, members, we initiated to develop the DFO as a section. Actually, it's one of our priorities in the operational area for this current year. It was the establishment of cluster task teams for crime combating purposes, which that one on the 65 clusters, one would say we have achieved that almost. But with regard to the enhancement or increase of staff in the DFOs, that we have not yet achieved across the country, because the HR processes was that there should first be a study in this environment, which currently they're still busy, will inquire as to how far and when are they finishing, because we want to increase the staff establishment in this environment and make it a section from station level up to the divisional level. I think I'll allow my team members to answer the other questions. Thanks, Honorable Chair.
General? General Botma?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, once again. Mr. Chair, I'm starting with the vetting. The current status is, as you know, in the past 2 years, we always give you figures on the number of people who've been vetting at national as well as provincial level. In June this year, we were informed by Crime Intelligence that we're going the e-vetting route. So we requested now, we provide them with a lame list of all DFOs, Mr. Chair, specifically focused for now on the CFR. They promised us in this month of September they will come back. The people that was not vet, then from the 1st of October we will do the e-vetting. It's a much faster process as
they... No, but General, that's not the question. The question is, what is the current status? How many is vetted, how many is not vetted? That is. We know the process, we know. Please indicate that to us, otherwise you must provide us with the figures.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If you allow me, I'll provide you with the figures in written. I don't have it here with me, the exact figures, specifically, so I apologize for that. In respect of the flexi hours, Bragdi Bupapi is managing. He will provide you feedback. Mr. Chair, if I continue, I just want to run through it. There was a question being raised in respect of less applications and in respect of the rejection of firearm license applications. I just want to clear it in respect of the, it's very difficult to determine. The current status, normally if it goes to the hunting season, we see increase of the number of people applying for hunting rifles, etc. But it fluctuates, Mr. Chair. So there's not a figure that I can say to you estimated, so it differs from one. What we however do already last year in our planning, me and Bragadir Popapi, he said, listen, what must happen in the previous 3 years, looking into what must be renewed and what is our planning for this coming financial year, how to address it, just to get our figures up and running and to inform our members. Then, as far as rejection is concerned, the principle is what General Masamola already indicated, is that we do the administration, we received it, we apply might, and from the side of the local police station is not in a position, neither legally entitled, to consider that application. Remember, the new application is going to the CFR, the renewals is going to provincial level. So the person on station level hasn't got the right to throw it aside. He or she, although they don't agree, must be submitted to the next level for consideration, Mr. Chair.
Just a moment, Honourable Malabatsi, short follow-up there.
Yeah, General Botman. I said, is it good to have less applications in a particular year as compared to the previous year? Are people resorting, maybe I must elaborate, are they resorting to illegal firearms, buying them for 50 rand? Or what do you think about this whole thing? Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I must be very honest, it's a very difficult question, because it's very difficult to determine what reflecting or the cost of the specific firearm, why there's an increase. I must be very honest, I don't know if there was any research being concluded, but according to me, I cannot answer it. I don't know if any of my colleagues can add on and see what, if there's a determination if there was less or increase and what causes this increase or drop of the number of applications, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, if I continue, the next one is related to the document. I want to change to the company. The question was asked in respect of the printing of these firearm licenses, etc. I just want to rephrase it, and sorry I answered it wrongfully, is that the machines itself, the printing machines, belong to the South African Police Service. It's not belonging to any company in South Africa. The ribbons... And that is where the problem comes in. All the consumables, the lamination, the ribbons, the clearing tapes, etc. This is what we're getting from companies, and they provide it to us that we can continue. with the printing of the license. Yes, we made provision that we can continue with the printing, but due to the fact that we are saying we are running out of the life cycle of these machines, we got a whole program now with governing printing works to replace that, specific the printing thereof. Currently also, as you know, the distribution of the license is from our office, so we carry that burden, that they also carry that specific burden, which will be quicker. Then in respect of the question on the storage facilities, the question on the storage facilities, I think I must go back. In 2005, we already request that the moratorium must be lifted on all files where a person is no longer alive, a dead person without firearms. Now, at numerous occasions, even when I start last year again, we submit another letter. So ask and plea that the moratorium must be lifted, because the moment the moratorium has been lifted, we can destroy quite a few hundred, if not nearly a million files at that point in time. So what we did for the interim period to address that, we got a plan of action there. We got a special task team that only working on these specific files. And when we said earlier on in our presentation, supply chain management provides us now specific storage facilities. Mr. Chair, we focus only on the dead people without firearms, because we are sitting with these files, it's cropping up from the old Arms and Ammunition Act from 1957. I can take you through all the legislation up to now. We are sitting with the files. So we work for ourselves. We are in a prayer session to say as soon as possible, we want to get these files into the containers, and from the containers that we can take it away and can destroy it. The day when we get the flicks principle, meaning the light has been flicked, we can start to destroy it to build in more space. Then the same apply in provincial level. We are now busy at provincial level visiting, because they will remember the renewal of firearm licenses, the renewal of competencies going to the provinces. So they will manage their own archiving systems. Only when the person don't have any more firearms in this country, the whole file, everything will come into the archiving in here for the process of destruction. Because there are certain things in respect of archiving legislation that we need to follow the process before we can destroy any file. So I must be very honest. If it's my prayer, Cesar, I want to see in the next year, 3 years, that we can get all these files out, because there will be sufficient space the moment we can get all these old files out, but currently we are stuck. So once again, I mentioned that prayer session. We will continue with that, Mr. Chair. Okay, then call it the other one.
Thanks, Vergea. Thanks, Honorable Chairperson. Mine relates to the flexi hours within my environment. The flexi hours, Honorable Chairperson, revolves mostly around the system, the business of the system. So we've got members coming early in the morning from 6, when the system is less busy, and others coming later from 8, just to work beyond 4 o'clock when the system is also less busy, just to make inroads in terms of progress. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Can we then move to Secretary of Police, if there's anything, then Gunfree South Africa, and then short responses from the various role players. We want to really wrap up this engagement. Secretary?
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Chair. I just want to respond to the question that was asked regarding whether CSP is researching the alternative proposal to licensing the individual as opposed to the firearm. We have a detailed research that we did. The ministerial committee that was established after the seminar that was held here, we did an extensive research which deals with this issue. The issue is competence is very important, and we also have to make sure that whoever is using the gun is competent to use it. So it's just the same principle as the car. You must be competent to have a license to drive the car. But that car must be registered and have a license to say this car, it's legal. And whoever uses it, you cannot go and drive a 18-wheeler truck with the Code 8 license. You must be competent to use that. So if you have a gun, so it's the same principle. So in the research, we also refer to areas in the legislation that needs to be amended, which we've already done, wherein we find that there's issues of the weakness. So both for us, in terms of the research, it's saying that you have to have the gun license, and you also have to have a competent person using it. But all of them have to be done simultaneously. You cannot divorce the two. And we have clarified it more so that it's easy to implement. What I can suggest, Honorable Chair, is maybe once we find, because the research has been done, when we come to do the presentation on the draft bill, we will also present the research, which is going to clarify some of the issues that have been raised.
Thank you, Secretary of Police. Right, Ms. Kirsten.
Thanks. So to say it's not based on specific cases of where it's being used in other countries, but it's based on, I guess, three principles. The one is, and then on evidence. So Gun-Free South Africa has made the suggestion based on the evidence that the area of compliance, there's been quite a lot of fraud and corruption. Okay, in 2013, the head of compliance was suspended, etc. So there's evidence that this is a particularly weak point. So one route would be to go strengthen, you know, and reduce the risks there. But another route would be to then say this is a very kind of discrete aspect and part of firearms control management, so take it out. So it's an innovation. But the two principles which would be supported in the way other countries manage some of their firearms, the one is the thing of independence. So for example, you know, in firearms appeals, in many countries, the firearms appeal process sits outside the regulatory authority. It's independent from SAPS in this instance. So it's the principle that basically in the area of firearms control management, there are indications and evidence to suggest that there it is appropriate in some instances to pull the stuff outside of SAPS. And then I guess the second principle, which would link to making it an independent regulatory body, is the principle that you could then broaden your membership so that it's not just SAPS, that you could have other departments, for example, the Department of Health, Education, you could have civil society representation and industry players. So you open it up a bit. So those are really the two principles guiding the idea, but it's really out there for, it's an innovation, I guess, and to then explore more. So one of the things we could do is do a bit more research of is this actually happening elsewhere in the country, I mean in the globe.
Right, thank you very much. Let's get quick responses from the various role players, starting with Advocate Welsh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, Mr. Chair, without changing any laws at this stage, one can only refer to Section 132 of the Firearms Control Act, which provides for a committee that the minister may, in fact, appoint. And many years ago, before the Act came into operation, we have, in fact, made proposals in that regard. Because of the lack of competence with regards to firearms in many areas within the police, we thought that might be a very good idea to start off with that. And we would then have a balanced approach in ensuring that there is a proper knowledge of firearms with regards to collecting, with regards to ordinary self-defense use, with regards to hunters and sportspersons and so forth. So that is, I thought, a very good starting point. With regards to an independent regulatory authority, that needs very careful consideration, because should you open that up too much and you politicize it, you may, at the end of the day, obviate the need for a proper functionary in this regard, and you may not get the proper results at the end of the day. But that is certainly something that we can consider. It is, there's merit in it, I believe, to have at least oversight in what is currently being done. The independence, lastly, of the appeal board is something that we have always proposed. We do not believe that it ought to be within the South African Police Service, and I think the close link between the Central Firearms Registry and the Appeal Board is still not acceptable to us.
Sorry, Mr. Chair, I can't add anything to that. They have to agree with that.
Mr. Stewart?
Thanks, Honourable Chair. If I can just make a light-hearted comment, first of all, in response to the general said there's too many lawyers here, I hope he realizes that you, General Botma, and Mr. Mongwe are also lawyers, so it encompassed quite a few of us. I'd like to make a few general comments, if I may. The first is that the statement that rules of engagement need to be established between the stakeholders on this side of the table and the police demonstrates, I think, the divide between us. It implies that there's some sort of confrontation between us, and that's certainly not the case from the industry. And one would hope that if there are going to be rules of engagement, that all stakeholders have those same rules of engagement. We tried it before, however, and it faltered in 2015 because what we wanted to talk about was operational issues, day-to-day issues. There's a problem here. How do we address it? SAPS wanted us to enter into an agreement, a large principle detailed agreement on how we would engage with them. We just need to sit down with them. We don't need any more than that at this stage. I'm concerned, and I just want to go back to a couple of comments because it shows the lack of understanding.
If you could just keep it very concise, because I must have a quorum, and
okay. I'll be concise insofar as lawyers can. The fact that comprehensive reasons are only going to be given from the 1st of August begs the question, how were decisions made before the 1st of August this year? And then one of the SAPS representatives, and I apologize for not writing his name down, I think it's a Deputy National Commissioner, said they're going to develop criteria for decision-making. Also begs the question, how has decision-making taken place without those criteria? It's a very serious problem. To go to the issue, I don't think that establishing an independent regulatory body for firearms would be appropriate at this point in our legislation. I think that there is a definite need, as I said in my presentation, for some form of civilian oversight. I think we have that mechanism. We have the legislation. We need to work with what we have. I do think that the issue of the appeals board, and I say this with the greatest of respect to Mr. Mongwe, the appeals board is not independent, and I think that we would have greater accountability from SAPS if you had an independent appeal board who could demand that the police account for their decisions. We do not have that at this point. What we have is the same decisions being made, the same decisions being appealed, and the same appeals being upheld on the same basis. It's a complete waste of resources because nothing changes. And the only way that you can achieve a constructive change is to take that function away from the police and have an independent body that can hold the police to account and in turn can teach the police how to make proper decisions.
Give a final to any member that wants to come in. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Honourable Chair, and thank you, the members, for indulging me. My name is Paul Oxley. I'm from Ghana, South Africa. I didn't get a chance to make an introduction earlier. We've been chewing the cud on this for a number of years now. Back in 2015 at the Firearm Summit, I said that firearm owners are responsible citizens of the country, and we would like to help craft a solution to the problems. We all have to take responsibility for the situation we're in, and we need to find our way out of the situation. And a lot of the things that have been said here by all the parties concerned are very valuable. The one elephant in the room that we haven't dealt with, however, and it was mentioned earlier, but it seems to have been sidelined, is the electronic connectivity of the with respect to the enhanced firearms management system. This lack of electronic connectivity is a huge issue insofar as control of the firearms that are out there at the moment. And the situation is getting worse by the day. There are firearms disappearing off the system. Dealers cannot check what firearms they're supposed to have in their stock. A solution about 2 months ago was proposed here in Cape Town at a meeting with Major General Botma and the Western Cape Dealers Forum. whereas there is an electronic connectivity system which currently operates and which was offered to the SAPS at no cost, very little cost, cost only to the
dealer's
press.
Thank you, sir. I think we take note of the information, it's valuable, but the other issue, I just want to get your sense on that. The independent board, what is your view?
Yes, absolutely. I believe there should be an independent board. It's definitely the way to go.
Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
Honourable Mhlongo, and any other member who wants to have a final say? Yes.
No, thanks. The abuse board, Chairperson, maybe in future, because as a committee also we have got a huge responsibility of protecting our own wildlife. Maybe the Chairperson, I'll request through you, Chairperson, that the appeals board, Chairperson, maybe briefly outline to us, you know, there was this Al Jazeera kind of channel that talked to some diplomatic criminality involving Chinese and all that, with the warning of our rhinos and all that. And these people actually then enjoying a thoroughfare of killing our own animals just for their own profiting abroad. But has there been any kind of consequent management against those particular people? Because they are using hunters' rights, which I think are internationally protected and all that, but actually then abusing our own resources in the country, which I really will be actually then making a serious mistake if I cannot raise that. Because even with the Minister of Intelligence, I asked him a direct question in Parliament, why are you not challenging this Al Jazeera? Because it's a very, very, very serious indictment. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Just very quickly, is to say that obviously one hopes that this meeting has been a catalyst for better cooperation and consultation between the stakeholders. But to finish off is to say, if there's any environment within the SAPS, and I suspect the CRC might be the other one actually, but if there's any environment that lends itself to becoming more effective and optimally functional by firstly decentralizing, which we've heard is happening, so please keep driving that, firstly decentralizing, and secondly fostering public-private partnerships, this is it. Let the CFR be a pilot for how decentralizing and pursuing public-private partnerships can improve performance and benefit all. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much. Any final word, Honourable Molobatsi? Are you covered? Honourable Kolobana? Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Honourable Members, and also the stakeholders for this interaction. I think there is some outstanding information that we need for further processing, so we just want to maybe ask the South African Police Service to provide that to us. Then in terms of the issues raised today, I think it's quite critical that the legislation process should get the earnest attention, and I think the Secretary of Police indicated the process, but it's quite critical that we move with that. Parliament is, winding up its matters at the end, ending next year, and of course, the elections in 2019. So we need to move on that process, but furthermore, the interaction with civil society, everybody, that's critical. We need that engagement. And then SAPS, of course, we had this indication by the Deputy National Commissioner today that there will be a round of talks with the relevant groups, but I think that needs a program that is viable and that's constant interaction, and that must be also be provided to the committee that we can see what is the progress with regard to those interactions, all the different fora. That's quite critical. We didn't really dealt with the appeal matter currently, but I mean that's an issue. I think we as a committee have got different views on it, whether the appeal in that matter is the right route to go, but we will leave it for another day to deal with that. Then in terms of the firearms environment in SAPS, it's still a huge concern. We had also the representations from the Social Justice Coalition, the letter that was made available, the concerns at grassroots level, but also the stations that we heard about today. So consequence management, critical. Then the issue of corruption. the vetting issue of CFR, I mean, if you don't got that information here today to the committee, it's a concern to me, because that is your first risk element of your risk plan. You must know who is in the CFR, who's got the authority to authorize things, who ensures that things are destroyed. So that's again a major concern to us. So we need that information quite critically. What is the status of the various role players, of the vetting? That is vital going forward, that we get that information going. Then in terms of innovation, Secretary of Police, I think there's been a lot of proposals around this table that a lot of the issues can be solved with the involvement of the private industry, the role players, and I think you must maybe from today's proceedings also maybe take the lead in ensuring that there is a proper roundtable discussion. What can be done to assist those technical issues that is currently making it difficult for the CFR to be effective? And then, of course, I think in the second quarterly report, we will deal also with the issue of staff members at the different CFR stations. Well, what can be done to improve that? But I think we've received a lot of information today, but South African Police Service, please ensure that you deal with the issues raised by the members, that we get the report backs on the outstanding issues. Thank you also to the stakeholders for coming to Parliament. And again, if there's serious problems, please alert us that we then can take it forward. Thank you very much, members, for today's meeting. We will then meet 10 o'clock on Tuesday with regard to the matter of the task team of this SAPS transformation task team, as well as the international panel. And, of course, legal services of SAPS must also come on Tuesday. Thank you very much. The meeting is closed.
Thank you.